Wendy, Eric Zorn is here. He's as feisty as ever. Eric, you look, even by your own standards, you look extra feisty today.
I think so, yeah. I'm feeling a little
What's bringing this on? Why so feisty?
There's a feisty twinkle in his eye.
There's a feisty twinkle in your eye.
It's been a really interesting little weekend for news.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. If it's okay with you, can we start with the Paul Ryan story? Because
sure.
I love this story.
Yeah.
He's not running. Well, he says he's not running, and he's not technically running, but a lot of people have believed that if it's a brokered convention, he would be the logical name that the Republican Party would pick.
Right.
What would be his motive for throwing us off the scent?
Well, let me just back up just a little bit. Ryan ran. He was Mitt Romney's running mate in 2012.
Yeah.
So he has been through the national vetting process where the media has taken an extra look at him. And he wasn't, you know, a terrific candidate. Obviously, his ticket lost. But he was someone, and he declined the opportunity to run for president. But he has a habit of declining things that he actually wants. He declined rather strenuously. He didn't say he didn't want to be the Speaker of the House last October. Hmm. I don't want to do it. I don't want to. No way. I got other things to work on. And finally,
lo and behold,
the party came to him and begged him as a compromise candidate, as a respected, serious policy guy. And I think he's like 44, 45 years old. He's not like
46.
Toward the end of his career. 46. He's right. He's near the end of his career. He's not near the end of his career, I'm saying.
He's 6'1", too, so, just in case you're wondering.
So you could pick him on your pickup basketball team.
Oh.
So anyway, you know, flashing forward, we've got this incredibly contentious primary season with Cruz and Trump fighting it out, and then there's also stray delegates out there, like for Rubio and some other candidates have won, and Kasich is still, you know, technically in the hunt. And there's a substantial amount of thought that says that we're going to get to this convention in July in Cleveland, and there's not going to be enough votes for any candidate to have a majority. You need a majority of the votes of them, at the Democratic convention also. And that after a couple of ballots where no one gets a majority, the party elders are going to gather and say, we need a compromise candidate, someone who has not been tainted by this process, hasn't been calling everybody names, and they'll bring in Paul Ryan. That was the thought. I thought it was the most plausible scenario when I was doing my New Year's predictions. I don't know if you guys remember.
We were
doing those. And the drumbeat's been growing louder as it's looking more and more likely that Trump is not going to get to, I think it's 1237, the number of votes he's going to need. He's going to fall short of that, and it's going to throw the convention into chaos. And so, you know, and people who are supporting Trump don't like Cruz. People who are supporting Cruz don't like Trump, and there's not really very many people supporting Kasich, so who are they going to go to? And so last Tuesday or Wednesday, Ryan finally called a news conference, and he basically, you know, he said, no way, I don't want this. The candidate should be someone who's run for the office. I don't want it right now. And there's sort of two ways to look at that. One is that he doesn't want it.
And do you believe he doesn't want it?
Well,
who would want it, for God's sakes?
Well, can't figure that out.
Let me explain the two schools of thought. I'll tell you the one that I don't subscribe to, which is that he thinks this is an incredible mess. Wendy, you said he's 46, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he could run in 4 years, he could run in 8 years, he could run in 12 years, he could run in 16 years, he would still be younger.
But he's getting the ultimate bye week. He doesn't have to run. I mean, if they do a brokered convention and they just pick his name and say, you're the guy the party wants, he doesn't have to go through the rigmarole that they've been going through the past couple
of months.
He runs
the risk of becoming a losing presidential candidate.
Yep.
But that's not...
And then how does that affect him four years from now? Eight years from now, Nixon
lost in 1960. He came back,
right.
I mean, so
and strong. He was our best president ever.
And Reagan,
quite a looker.
Well, yes. Reagan didn't actually run, but Reagan, you know, he lost narrowly. He came very close in 1976 to getting the nomination from Gerald Ford.
But he's already been branded a non-winner. He already ran last time with Mitt Romney and didn't win. He's already got that on.
Maybe he does have it there. But you know, the thought is that he just thinks this. This presidential season for the Republicans is like a dumpster fire, right? It's really
he wants no part of it.
And he wants no part of it. He's
going to
let
move.
He's going to let Cruz or Trump or Kasich or maybe Mitt Romney will jump in, something like that. And he's going to let that candidate go down to defeat.
Do you think Mitt Romney would jump in?
Mitt Romney's a possibility. He clearly wants to be president badly. And
yeah.
He was very disappointed that he didn't win last time.
But just the mere fact that he so castigated Donald Trump, and it didn't make did it not make a dent, more people started supporting Donald Trump after he came out against Donald Trump. Doesn't that show Mitt Romney that the American people just don't seem to be on his side at this point?
Yes, and I think Mitt Romney would be a really lousy choice on their part. And I think Ryan probably sees that this election looks very unlikely for the Republicans, the presidential election. So he could, so Ryan or whoever, all these other people who think they might want to be president can wait 4 years. And if things, if Hillary Clinton, if she wins, is as bad as they think she's going to be, then that's going to be a great opportunity for someone in 4 years
to come in and swoop in and save the day.
That's one school of thought. The other school of thought is that this is exactly what Ryan would have to say, would want to say,
it's
would
all
need
orchestrated.
To say right now in order to have any hope of unifying the Republican Party
yep.
once he's chosen. He can't seem to be seen as angling forward or trying to undermine the
right.
process that's going on right now. He can't seem to be like secretly plotting against Trump or Cruz or Kasich. He has to be the one who is oh me, okay, and
poker
dragged
face.
In by his arm, you know. You get up there on that stage and you give your acceptance speech. He's like, oh, well, okay.
Yeah.
It's already written, you know that.
So that's a school that I think, I mean, it's, I still think that he would do it if they asked him, which is why I don't take totally seriously his, you know, Sherman-esque statement.
William
Tecumseh Sherman, who said, if nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve, you know.
I was thinking more Sherman and Peabody, but I love the reference too.
There was a great addition to that. Apparently like Morris Udall or someone like that said something like if I am nominated, I will move to Mexico. And if I am elected, I will fight extradition.
Very funny.
But so my theory is that you have to. He has to say that now. He has to say like no, as emphatically as possible if he has any hope of not only being drafted but then having the hope of the party coming together behind him, because that's what's going to have to happen. This convention will blow up if they don't nominate Cruz or Trump. So you have to have somebody who is seen as a white knight and not someone who's been evilly plotting behind the
scenes.
Are
you in the same school of thought that many people are, that if for some reason this comes to a convention and they choose somebody other than the front runner, even though Trump doesn't have, or Cruz doesn't have enough of the magic number, enough of the delegates, a lot of people say that this just shows that the political process in America is a sham. Are you one of those people?
Yes, I am of the feeling that if someone has a substantial lead, I mean, if it's really close, you can argue, well, it's like the third quarter of a football game. It's postponed by lightning storm. And you can't say, well, they were going to win, so let's give them the game.
Yeah.
I think at some point you have to throw it into another process. But, you know, we have all these primaries, and the illusion of that is that the voters are picking the winner. And in our political tradition, the person with the most votes is the winner. And, of course,
Al Gore that.
I know. We have the Electoral College. We have other systems that are somewhat un- or anti-democratic that go against that. But I think that there is a strong sentiment out there, like if Trump gets to the convention with the most votes, which I think he will, and the most delegates, I should say, well, both, actually the most votes and the most delegates, and to have it given to somebody else because Cruz has been playing this ground game really well. He's been winning all these state conventions where they haven't had primaries. He's been getting all these extra delegates that he's been gaming the system, and that the system, I mean, you know, we pay for these primaries. Something that fascinates me is that, you know, the primary, we keep getting reminded by Reince Priebus and the, you know, these other people and the party bigwigs that political parties are private institutions and we can make our own rules. And I'm thinking, well, if you're a private institution, why are we paying for your primary elections? You know, we're like spending millions of dollars to hold elections so that you can pick your candidates in this apparently democratic way. And then you're saying, oh, well, but we make our own rules. So something about that is kind of bothering me. But I think it's going to be a strong sentiment when we get to Cleveland that Trump's going to deserve it.
More to discuss with Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. If you'd like to comment or a question, then 312-981-7200 is your best bet. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Eric Zorn is here of the Chicago Tribune. Is he feisty? Oh, yeah. He's very, very feisty. Eric, a couple of questions. Question number one is this. The comptroller here in town has decided, in the state, has decided to delay the paychecks of the lawmakers who can't seem to figure out a way to make the budget work. So they'll be slightly strapped for cash. They'll get their money. It'll just take them a little bit longer. Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I think that it is a good thing that our lawmakers are feeling urgency to get this done, because there are people who are really hurting because we don't have a budget, and our governor and the General Assembly can't agree on this. There are people who are hurting. It's a good thing that they're feeling urgency. I don't particularly like the tactic of withholding paychecks. If you remember, Governor Quinn did something somewhat similar a couple of years ago over the pension, that he said he wasn't going to pay state lawmakers until they came to some sort of reconciliation on the pension problem that he was trying to push them into action. And I was opposed to that too. I thought that was, you know, do you really want the executive branch yanking the chains of the legislative branch. As a general rule, I mean, whether you agree or disagree, because the time is going to come when you disagree with what they're yanking the chains about. They're withholding paychecks, putting that extra pressure on them to do something. I think it's potentially a really bad precedent. I believe, from what I've read, that Comptroller Munger she's a Republican, and she's running for re-election because, if you remember, Judy Bartopinka was elected Comptroller in November of 2014, and then shortly thereafter died.
Right.
Munger is an appointee of Governor Rauner, and she has to face a special election this fall running against Susana Mendoza, who's the clerk of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is widely seen as a political move on her part to do this. And what she's doing, you spelled it out just right. She's not refusing to pay them. She's saying, I'm going to put you in the same stack of bills.
Right.
You know, we are like $7.5 billion behind in our bills.
God.
And people are taking months to get paid. And these are people who are providing real services, as opposed to our legislators who are not really doing very much right now because they're waiting for their instructions from the leaders. So it's very satisfying that she's doing this. On the other hand, I do worry about the precedent. And because, you know, a lot of these lawmakers have very little power, really.
Yeah.
And this is their job. This is how they make their car payments and their tuition payments and their mortgage payments. So to put them... On the other hand, I mean, I just want to, as I'm blabbering away here, I realize that you're not going to hear any violin music from the people who are running these social service agencies, who are not getting paid, whose clients are not getting served, and so on. So, I mean, politically, a very smart move, and I hope that it does generate some pressure, some momentum on the part of our the General Assembly and the governor to come to some terms on these things, because this has gone on for 10 months now. I forget the clock is running, but when we get to July 1st, it'll be a year without a budget.
That is inexcusable. And Eric, I have an idea for your next column. You should find out the city of Chicago's credit score for all the late payments and not paying.
Our credit score has taken a hit.
Well, you can actually find this out. You could go and look at our credit rating. You look at the bond rating, like Moody's, Standard & Poor's, those kind of places, and it's bad. I think the Chicago one was moved down to junk status. I don't want to say that because there might be some bond investors out there listening to this show for advice. But seriously, you do need to take a look at that. But our credit rating has gone down and down and down because of exactly the kind of things that you're talking about, Wendy. That it's and what that means, of course, is that it's more expensive. It's not that we can't borrow money. It's just that it's way
higher
more
interest
expensive.
Rates.
Way, way higher interest rates. They just borrowed a bunch of money on the schools, and it was like, it's something like 6 or 7% interest rates. I mean, interest rates that you haven't heard of for years we're having to pay because our credit rating is so bad.
So awful.
So this is a real, among the real problems that impact all of us, is that, you know, when you're paying that much to borrow that kind of money to cover these bills,
yep.
Then the bills get bigger down the road, and our kids will be gone, but our kids are going to have to pay for this big time. So it's a real issue.
They better start saving.
Yeah, without a doubt. One more quick topic. We don't have a whole lot of time, but I find this very interesting. And I don't know if this was your idea originally or it was an idea you heard about and thought this would be a good thing, but maybe doing away with audiences at the presidential debates wouldn't be the worst thing
in
the world.
It's something that's been bothering me for years, that when the audiences get kind of rowdy at the presidential debates.
Yeah.
And it was really, really noticeable last Thursday night when Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton debated in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And they were yelling and screaming at the answers and even the questions.
Yeah.
You know, so they'd ask a question, they'd be cheering the question. I'm thinking, this is like, and in my column I referred to it as like the Maury Povich show.
Yeah.
He's half expecting someone to pick up a folding chair and throw it at somebody. And you're thinking, like, this is not what presidents do. Presidents don't have to stand in a room and debate public leaders while people are jeering and screaming
right.
at them. You want to know their thought processes. You want to hear them think through their answers, give an answer, have it responded to. You don't want to turn it into a show like that. And as long as the audiences can be somewhat quiet and respectful, okay, I don't really care that they're there. But they were really a part of that show. I thought it was really detracted from it.
Yeah.
It's a serious thing we're doing here, picking a new
leader.
But
they've done this in the past. You have a debate where it's just a moderator and the two candidates, right? There's not
always
an audience.
Well, sure. Of course, the original big presidential debate was Nixon versus Kennedy back in, what was that? That would have been 60. And it was done over here at the BBM studios. And it was just in a studio. And there was no audience at all.
And many people think that it was that debate that cost Nixon the presidency.
Nixon sweating and everything. Right. Looking so
right.
Yeah, not a good showing. Yeah,
no, he didn't do too
but
well.
But I think it would be much better to have them in a studio setting or the kind of, you know, Channel 7 does these debates where they have like 50 people in the room.
Yeah,
It's not like, you know, a terrible, I mean, they're trying to turn these into big events. It's very manageable. And you don't hear people yelling during the debates. And you know, hold your applause to the end. That's fine.
Although times have changed. Even if there are 50 people, they may be 50 of the loudest people.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Steve Bertrand agrees with me on this because we were talking about it on the Mincing Rascals the other day.
Hey, where can you find that? WGNplus.com?
And iTunes and Stitcher, all the places where fine podcasters. We're talking, Steve, about limiting the audiences at presidential debates.
Limiting or doing away with fully? You think not just limiting them, but getting rid of the entire audience,
I could see getting
right?
rid of them. You think getting rid of them or just having them putting socks in their mouth?
Socks in their mouth, oh, definitely.
That's better.
Yeah.
That's much better.
They're ruined. Yeah, or tasering them.
Eric, thank you so much. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.